Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Dhritarashtra quits home, text number 27. Ya swakat parata va iha jata nirveda atmanam Atmavan Hridi Kritva Harim Gehat Pravrajet Sa Narottama Yaswakat Parato Veha Jata Nirveda Atmavan Hridi Kritva Harim Gehat Pravrajat Sanarottamaha Yaswakat Parato Veha Jata Nirveda Atmavan Hridi Kritva Harim Gehat Pravrajat Sanarottamaha
Anyone who
Swakat
by his own awakening
Paratava
or by hearing from another
Iha
here in this world
Jata
becomes
Nirveda,
indifferent to material attachment.
Atmavan,
consciousness.
Hridi,
within the heart.
Kritva,
having been taken by.
Harim,
the personality of Godhead.
Gehat,
from home.
Pravrajat
goes away.
Sa,
he is.
Narottama,
the first class human being.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
He is certainly a first class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus leaves home and depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing within his heart. He's certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus leaves home and depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing within his heart.
Purport. There are three classes of transcendentalists, namely, one, the dhira, or one who is not disturbed by being away from family association. Two, one in the renounced order of life, a sannyasi, by frustrated sentiment. And three, a sincere devotee of the Lord who awakens God consciousness by hearing and chanting and leaves home depending completely on the personality of Godhead who resides in his heart. The idea is that the renounced order of life, after a frustrated life of sentiment in the material world, may be the stepping stone on the path of self-realization, but real perfection of the path of liberation is obtained when one is practiced to depend fully on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who lives in everyone's heart as Paramatma. One may live in the darkest jungle alone out of home, but a steadfast devotee knows very well
that he is not alone. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is with him, and he can protect his sincere devotee in any awkward circumstance. One should therefore practice devotional service at home, hearing and chanting the holy name, quality, form, pastimes, entourage, etc., in association with pure devotees. And this practice will help one awaken God consciousness in proportion to one's sincerity of purpose. One who desires material benefit by such devotional service can never depend on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, although he sits in everyone's heart. Nor does the Lord give any direction to persons who worship him for material gain. Such materialistic devotees may be blessed by the Lord with material benefits, but they cannot reach the state of the first-class human being, as above mentioned. There are many examples of such sincere devotees in the history of the world, especially in India, and they are our guides on the path to self-realization. Mahavidura is one of such great devotees of the Lord, and we should all try to follow his lotus footsteps for self-realization. Ya svakat parato veha jata nirveda atmavan priti kritva harim gehat pravrajat sanarotama. He is certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands either by himself or from others the falsity and misery of this material world, and this leaves home and depends fully on the Personality of Godhead residing within his heart. Om Vishnu Vraya Krishna Prasthai Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Viranta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasatam Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Srinivadi Paskatya De Siddharane. Shubhra mentions in this purport that there are three classes of transcendentalists. Maybe a little difficult to understand what's the difference between the Dira and the Sannyasi. But apparently the Dira, he liked his family, and the Sannyasi didn't. And the other is a devotee. He may or may not like his family, but still he engages in devotional service. And out of these three, Prabhupada recommends the position of the devotee. Of course, as we know, one may be apparently a devotee, but one may not be actually fully practicing the path of devotion. To be a devotee doesn't mean just to externally show the or perform the activities of devotional service, but it also means to be devoted to Krishna. And devotion to Krishna means not to be attached to material conceptions. In the material conception of life, we think ourselves to be this body. And in the material conception of life, we are attached to things in relationship to the body. And in the spiritual conception of life, we actually identify ourselves as Krishna's servant, and we become attached to Krishna. So, theoretically, we may all, if we did a survey, how many devotees believe that they should be attached to Krishna? Everyone will, I hope, here at least, will agree that actually we should be attached to Krishna. And indeed, Krishna may have revealed himself to each one of us to some degree, so we may feel some attachment to him. But then again, if we were to declare that today, to please Krishna, we'll have a special fast day. So, undoubtedly, we may think, well, that's a nice idea, but we may not be very enthusiastic about it. I may perhaps give other examples, but we may also be attached to this material body. And in order to become free from our attachment to this material body, there may be certain recommendations for hearing, cultivating knowledge, and for renunciation. For instance, I remember when I was a temple president in 1970, then at that time, we used to Prabhupada on one tape and whatever Prabhupada said on the tape, because that's what we did, because we didn't know anything else. So Prabhupada said on the tape, every appearance, today is the appearance day of this acharya, and today we'll have a half-day fast. So that became the standard, that every appearance day of an acharya, we'd have a half-day fast. And if you look on the Vaishnava calendar, there's a lot of appearance days. So, and we were all new devotees, quite young, with strong, healthy appetites. So every other day was the appearance day of an acharya, and we go, oh no, another acharya. Why do so many acharyas have to come? And then, on Ekadasi, we all have to fast, because that was the standard. Prabhupada even said on one tape that the real standard of Ekadasi is not to take any water and stay up all night, just chanting. Prabhupada said that was the real standard, but in my temple, everyone had to at least fast on Ekadasi. There was a new devotee, I remember his wife. Somehow or another, she became disinterested in Krishna consciousness. It was probably too austere for her. But he was attached to her, and it was a fast day. And I said, you have to fast. And in the meantime, his mind was probably completely bewildered. My wife just left, and now I got to fast. So very shortly, he followed in his footsteps of his wife, and I don't think he fasted on that day either. So in the beginning, certain types of austerities may be favorable for the cultivation of Krishna consciousness. And certain types of knowledge we may cultivate may also be favorable. But ultimately, devotional service has to go beyond this renunciation of the material world and trying to understand the difference between ourselves and the body. Because if one simply sticks on that platform, the heart, as it says in the Nectar of Devotion, will simply get harder. Although we want to develop the real conceptions, and we want to give up sense gratification, material sense gratification, but without learning spiritual sense gratification, without actually gratifying our senses spiritually, without understanding things spiritually, then simply by renunciation and the cultivation of knowledge, the heart will become hard, and one will not actually get the desired goal, which is love of God, Krishna Prema. So here it says there may be a path when they realize that here I am, it's Dhritarashtra, I'm growing older, and I've been doing the same things over and over again. It's the same eating, the same sleeping, the same bill I have to pay every month. Everything is more or less the same. And although at the beginning there may have been some happiness or some juice in my materialistic life, but now it's become a little dry after so many years. It's just like if one has chewing gum. At the beginning, there may be a little sweetness, but after some time, then one is simply exercising his jaw. And one starts wondering, what am I going through this chewing this gum for? I'm not getting anything out of it. The only thing that's happening is my fillings are coming out. Therefore, after some time, he may reach the mature decision of spitting out the chewing gum, hopefully into the grass somewhere where no one's looking. But if you tell someone when they first put the chewing gum in the mouth that you're wasting your time, he'll think you're nuts. What do you mean? I just bought the chewing gum and it's sweet. But after some time, one will realize that there is only, the sweetness was only temporary. So this is the dhira. On the other hand, if someone puts, you know, instead of chewing gum, he puts some rocks in his mouth and starts chewing on them, right away he figures it wasn't so sweet. Or if someone gave him a used piece of chewing gum. They used to have a song when I was younger to show you the mentality of the people. The song was, did your chewing gum lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight? This is number one hit in America. So this is their lamentation. So sometimes in the beginning and the end, our relationships may not be so sweet, and it may be just like the chewing gum without the juice, even at the beginning. So either class of persons, they want to renounce the material world, but that renunciation of the material world generally is not very successful. Especially in this age, it's not recommended, because it is very unlikely one will be able to undergo the austerities. One doesn't have the physical nature or the mental disposition to undergo the austerity, so one can actually transcend material life. Instead, as we've seen, even within our society, sometimes we find someone renounces his family life. And the reason why he renounces family life is not so much he's interested in Krishna, he's more or less he didn't like his wife. And it was hard to take care of so many kids, and he renounced his family life, and he became a very staunch sannyasi for 2 years, and then finally he found the girl that he was actually looking for, and he renounced his sannyas, the ultimate renunciation, and starts another family again. Prabhupada even mentions this in the Bhagavatam, that the sannyasi who's so-called renounced and then goes to the sacred place to start another family life. In India, Prabhupada said that many persons, the ladies, think it would be very auspicious to have a child by a renounced person. They have this conception. And there are many persons who know about these ladies, and they go to the holy places in the dress of garb of a renounced person to enjoy these ladies who are looking for a renounced person. It's called the cheaters and the cheated. In any case, the material world is certainly quite complicated, but generally simply renouncing the material world can't make one happy. Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita, Sanyasastu mahabaho dukam aptum ayogataha yoga yukta munir brahma nature nadigachite. That's simply renouncing the material existence, sannyas, but without engaging in devotional service cannot actually make one happy. It may free one from misery. The reason why we do everything is ultimately to become happy. But in our search for happiness, first of all, we'd like to free ourselves from misery. Therefore, there's a path of giving up the cause of our misery. If one realizes that my family attachments are the cause of my misery, then naturally he'll want to give them up. Or if my attachment to material things are the cause of my misery, then certainly one wants to give them up. Just like even my mother, who's not a devotee, she renounced smoking cigarettes. So renounced smoking cigarettes is quite an attachment in the material world. There's quite a bit of propaganda, quite an amount of propaganda to get everyone to smoke cigarettes. They have posters everywhere, especially in the eastern countries. Now everywhere there's horses and cowboys and everywhere, getting everyone to smoke cigarettes. But she gave it up. She didn't give it up out of love of God. Nor by giving it up, she's become blissful. But she realized it was the cause of misery, therefore she gave it up. Or others may renounce other things. Alcoholics renounce alcohol, not so much to develop love of God, but because they realize it is actually miserable. To engage in this activity is not only doesn't make me happy, but it makes me unhappy. So one may gradually give up, one may realize one after another that alcohol makes me miserable, cigarettes makes me miserable, my attachment to eating too much makes me miserable, sleeping too much makes me miserable, then one may become to the position of renouncing practically everything. But that doesn't mean that one will become happy. And Maya will say, yes, that these things make you miserable, but if you simply adjust a little bit, you can actually be happy doing the same thing. This is even common philosophy in our society. That actually that you have to have a nice, happy family life, otherwise you can't ultimately renounce. You have to find your true love, and then afterwards, when you've become completely satisfied, then you can renounce your true love and find your truer love, namely Krishna. But that may not necessarily be true. According to Prabhupada, when he was younger, he became attracted to another lady after marrying his wife. It appears that he, himself and his wife didn't get along very well. And as we can see later, his wife gave him the mantra, or he gave his wife the mantra, tea or me. And she chose tea. But Prabhupada from the very beginning wasn't very attracted to his wife, and they didn't have such a nice relationship, so he wanted to marry another wife. But his father said, "My dear Abhai, better not to marry. You're very fortunate that you don't like your wife, because later on this will serve you good when you want to take sannyas and dedicate yourself completely to Krishna." But here recommends that rather than dwell simply on trying to give up what we're attached to, then we should try to become attached to Krishna, and then naturally our attachments, material attachments, to other things will slacken. Krishna consciousness is not to give up our loving propensity, as sometimes people think, even the devotees think like that. That many of our grihasthas, they think, to have affection for my wife and children, this is all maya. And sometimes it is maya. As one Mataji said, in my family life I was very chaste, because my husband chased me all over the house all the time. So that type of affection is not the affection what we're talking about. The real affection will develop when one sees things in relation to Krishna. It is not that if I love Krishna, then my loving propensity diminishes, but it actually should expand. And if one loves Krishna, if one develops one's attachment for Krishna, that is not that I give up my loving affection for my family, but my loving affection for everyone increases, including my family. Of course, if my family, Prabhupada said, if it's unfavorable for Krishna consciousness, if my wife or my somehow or another, they can't understand what Krishna consciousness is, that although I've developed more affection, more of a relationship out of loving feelings for them, but if they only can keep it the level of association on the level of sense gratification, that kind of relationship may not be very favorable. But if the wife is Krishna conscious, if the husband is Krishna conscious, if the children are being trained in Krishna consciousness, then it is not that by becoming Krishna conscious, my loving feelings for my wife and children will diminish. Actually, they'll increase. They'll increase as they increase for Krishna. For Krishna's family, it includes everyone, including my wife and children. And that means that will automatically decrease my material attachments, including in my household life. Although my love and affection for my wife and children may increase on the spiritual platform, but my material conception, my material attachment will proportionally reduce. And that's the type of relationship that's recommended here. And the process is not very complicated. Hearing about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness and then trying to practice it. The philosophy of Krishna consciousness means to give up our material conception that love will be shown simply by bodily interactions. But love can actually be shown by devotional interactions in relation to Krishna. If one can accept that conception and live accordingly, then one becomes aware of Krishna's form, his quality, his pastimes, his loving exchanges, and one can feel Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. One can feel transcendental satisfaction. On the other hand, if one doesn't understand this by the process of hearing, one may approach the Lord, because many people approach the Lord. There are so many religions who encourage people to approach the Lord, but they have no understanding how the Lord is a person, and how ultimately spiritual life is personal, and how ultimately real happiness is personal. Because they don't know about Krishna, nitevidu swarthi katim hi Vishnu, darashya ye bahir arthamanina. They take something insignificant as being very, very important. Therefore they go to God, to Krishna, and they pray, "My dear Lord, please give me," we've heard the song before, "give me a house, give me a wife, give me a color TV, Jai Jagadisha Hari." They have so many mantras they may be chanting, but behind the mantra is this idea that may my life be blessed, my material life be blessed by the Lord. As one man, he was in India in order to bring the people, the boatmen would be sailing down the Ganges, but in order, and then carrying a load or passengers, but in order to go back to the original place, they'd have to walk along the bank of the Ganges and pulling the boat with a rope. So on the bank of the Ganges is not a highway or a nice, comfortable, grassy area. It's full of rocks and all kinds of other, nowadays there's probably glass on the bank, stool especially. So not very pleasant to pull your boat back. So one man was praying to God, "My dear Lord, please give me the blessing." So God, he was so sincere that God appeared before him and said, "Yes, what blessings can I give you? Please give me the blessings that there will be pillows all along the bank of the Ganges. So when I pull my boat back, then everything with my feet will not have to cut the rocks or the glass." Or as the other story goes, one lady was in the forest carrying a very heavy load of sticks on her head. And she was an old lady, and at this time the sticks fell off her head, and with great anxiety she cried out to the Lord, "My Lord, I'm all alone in the forest. Please help me. Please help me." So God, so sincere was her prayer that God came and said, "Yes, what can I do for you?" So she said, "I've dropped all these sticks. Please put them back on my head. You're the only one who can do it." So God said, "No problem," picked up the sticks and disappeared. Praise the Lord. This type of activity is not recommended, that now we're suffering in the material world, may God bless us so that we can have a better material suffering. We can suffer less. Because of God, if one can get the mercy of God, then he can end all suffering. And not only end all suffering, but he can get a positive life full of unlimited happiness which goes on forever. And that's, of course, what's recommended. But that requires some understanding and some experience. Theoretically, we may be practically on one platform of existence, and then we hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, and it's talking about a very high level of loving God. But unless we become aware of Krishna, then there's no question of loving him. We can't love someone we don't know why he's lovable. And unless we actually become conscious of Krishna, unless Krishna reveals himself to us, then there's no question of loving Krishna. But how do we get Krishna to reveal himself? Krishna cannot reveal himself if we're attached to material conceptions, because that would be unfair. Krishna doesn't take away our free will. Actually, we have certain attachments. That's our free will. And those attachments have been cultivated since time immemorial. Now we're attached to this body, and it's not by accident we got this body. It was the result of our work for many lifetimes. We're attached to things in relation to this body, and it's not by accident that we have these certain likes and dislikes. And if Krishna suddenly came before us and we were suddenly in bliss, then that's almost like he'd steal away all our attachments. And then we'd say, oh my God, there is a God. I'm not God. This is terrible. Go away. I didn't want you to come so quick. So Krishna cannot, even if he wanted to, which he does, he generally doesn't reveal himself so quickly because we have to voluntarily give up our material attachments. Just like if we run up to a tree and we grab it and we say, let me go, leave me alone. But, you know, what are the trees doing? The trees, you know, we're attached to the tree. It's not that the tree is attached to us. Similarly, we've acquired not only this gross body, but all of us probably have noticed we also have a subtle mind. And in spite of the fact that we may not even agree with our mind, but our mind is quite strong. It doesn't really care whether we agree with it or not. Even if we ask it, please go away. Look, who do you think is boss around here? Who do you think you are anyhow? Do you know who I am? Similarly, we've acquired not only this gross body, but all of us probably have noticed we also have a subtle mind. And in spite of the fact that we may not even agree with our mind, but our mind is quite strong. It doesn't really care whether we agree with it or not. Even if we ask it, please go away. Look, who do you think is boss around here? Who do you think you are anyhow? Do you know who I am? No, who are you? I'm your mind. Look, I don't want you to be here. Well, tough luck. I'm not going to go away. Until you do what I want, I'm going to torture you even more. Surrender. So as we've noticed that even we don't like the mind, that's just another side of attachment, aversion. We can just be as much absorbed, even more absorbed in fighting our mind than agreeing with it. We can occupy more time during the day telling our mind to go away than asking the mind what we can do for it. So this attachment and aversion to the mind, just like you become a devotee, you hear all this high philosophy, and the mind says, wow, this is terrible. You know, you don't really believe in this, do you? And you go, well, I'm trying to. Well, don't. Forget about it. And then we say, all right. Then we perform some activity we know we're not supposed to perform, innocent or otherwise. And then the mind says, just see. Or the intelligence says, don't you feel guilty? You're pretending to be on such a high platform, and now you're acting lower than, you know, actually who you think you are. Why are you doing this for us? And then we think, well, I can't give it up. I just can't give it up. I'm too attached to this. And the mind says, well, just give up devotional service then. Don't be so embarrassed out of these activities that you're doing. Just surrender fully to material life, and that way no one will criticize you. In other words, bloop. In any case, the point is that the devotee, he has to recognize what level of existence he's actually on, what he's actually attached to, what is his capacity for devotional service. Therefore, there are four vanas, and especially there are four ashrams. So one has to find his position, as it says, Parama Karuna Pahudvi Jana Nityai Gora Chandra Shava Avatara Sarashira Mani Kevala Anandakanda. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Lord Nityananda, they've come here and they've given us such a nice process. Simply dancing and chanting and taking prasad. Prabhupada one time said that it's such a simple process, Kevala Anandakanda, simply dancing, chanting, and taking prasad. Such an easy process. But then someone may object, well, it's not so easy. But Prabhupada said it is easy, because that's all it is dancing and chanting. But, Vishaya Charya, Seirase Majiya, Muke Bolo Hari Hari. What's difficult is that we're attached to sense gratification. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu doesn't say to give it up, he says to regulate it. Of course, when one moves into a temple, is expected that the standard of regulation of sense gratification should be different from those who are living on the outside, or those who are living outside may be very strict, but at least those who are living in the temple, their standard of sense gratification should be less. But everyone in the material world who's in the material conception of life has some standard of sense gratification, and that should be regulated. Yukta hara viharasya yukta chetas vikarmasya. Don't eat more, don't eat less, eat what's necessary. Don't sleep more, don't sleep less, sleep what's necessary. Then everyone has a different body, everyone has a different psychophysical nature, so what's good for one person, too much for one person may not be enough for another person. But in any case, that's not the objective. The objective is, in the midst of our struggling to regulate our sense gratification, one should try to get an attachment for Krishna by joyfully engaging in the process of devotional service. Just like we have our sadhana for a couple hours a day, or a few hours a day. So the idea is put aside all the other preoccupations we have, all our likes and dislikes. You know, I don't like, you know, the way this devotee looked, and he never gave me any respect. He stepped on my foot yesterday, never said he was sorry. He did that last year also. I realize he doesn't like me. My roommate snores. You know, he's a little eccentric. Talks in his sleep about his pet dog. So to put aside all these, and he's leading kirtan, you know, actually who knows who's really chanting for. So to put aside these conceptions for at least a little while during the day, and then joyfully engage in the process, trying to focus the mind upon Krishna, and try to become aloof from all the distractions of the mind. Yogat chalati manasa. And as we've noticed, that when we're in Maya, the mind doesn't bother us very much. The mind somehow or another becomes peaceful and says, you're doing a good job. And as soon as we become Krishna, try to chant our rounds, then millions of preoccupations and anxieties and distractions, they come to our mind. And we think, wow, this is really tough chanting japa. Wow, my God. I was a lot better off. This causes all kinds of psychological problems, this process. That's the real test, is how to become aloof from the mind and just joyfully chant Hare Krishna, take prasad without anxiety. Generally, our greatest anxiety, will I get something to eat? Then after that, will I get something to sleep? Where is some place to sleep? And then the next thing is, if we can take care of those things, is she loves me, she loves me not, she loves me, she loves me not. And then after that, it's where is the house, where is the car, where is the insurance, where is the education for the kids? So much anxiety in the material world. But whatever our position is, whatever our anxieties are, the secret is somehow or another to put these anxieties aside and just to happily engage in Krishna consciousness, at least for a certain period of time during the day. And then one will realize that actually my efforts during sadhana to solve my problem didn't really solve my problems. I don't know. At least I can say that I've been chanting japa for 30 years, at least in this lifetime. And there are so many problems that come to my mind, and I don't think I've solved very many problems during japa. And even if I solve one or two, the solutions probably weren't ultimately solutions. On the other hand, if we can simply, in other words, we're wasting our time. Most of our time is just wasted. Especially when we're chanting. Unless we just put aside our mental conceptions and our mental anxieties, masu chaha, and just chant very peacefully, at least peacefully, trying to concentrate on hearing the holy name. And then as we become practiced in becoming aloof from our thoughts, then trying to improve our japa at the same time. Try to chant with more feeling, try to hear more attentively, and then be receptive for Krishna's form, And then as we become practiced in remembering Krishna's form, actually try to feel his presence. Because we have spiritual senses, and by feeling Krishna's presence, we can actually feel Krishna's presence, just by trying to do so. And feeling Krishna's presence will mean that we'll actually acquire a taste. We'll experience transcendental pleasure. That is sense gratification. Transcendental sense gratification. And that transcendental sense gratification will free us from all our other attachments to the material conception of life. That's what we're aspiring for, that ruchi, and that's possible by practice. Once ruchi comes, and as ruchi becomes more consistent, then devotional service becomes more spontaneous. But in the Shuddha Prem class I was giving, the whole secret is somehow or another, whatever our devotional activity, whether we're here, as I was now listening to Braja Bihari Prabhu's class, he told us, how many attended his class? Anyone here attend his class? Remember the verse? The two verses? The first one? Sadhu Sangha. Remember that verse? Sadhu Sangha. Namakirtan. Bhagavat Sevana. And then the next one? Shri Murtera Sevaya. That's the second one. And then to worship the Mathura Vasi. Murtera Shravana Sevaya. Shraya Sevana. So these five practices, these are mostly our sadhana. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, chanting japa, living in the temple, and association with the devotees. So when we're performing these activities, if we can just concentrate on them and then try to improve the quality of them, then the result is not that we have to give up all our sense gratification, all our material conceptions all at once. It's not possible. But during that time, if we try to concentrate and improve those five activities, the result is naturally they'll go away. Naturally our material conceptions will vanish. We won't remember we had them. It'll take an effort to figure out what kind of Maya I used to be in. And when we figure it out, we won't even be attracted to it. On the other hand, as it mentions here, which I'll stop here now, but if we just try to give up what we're attached to in the material world and shut it to praying class in Bhajana Kriya, there's a stage called Viyuta Vikalpa. That is trying to renounce what we're attached to. But the result is generally we become more attached. Or Vishaya Sangara. Trying to figure out whether we should renounce or we should enjoy in the spirit of renunciation. Generally people who are on that platform, they can't figure it. They actually become bewildered simply. Even they get married, they think, why did I get married? I should have been renounced. Prabhupada once told his servant that, Shruti Kirti, he was serving Prabhupada for some years, and then one day he got married. And then he came back to Prabhupada and said, Prabhupada, I made a mistake, I got married. And Prabhupada said, yes, it's just like before the Sunday feast. You're thinking, I can't wait for the feast. There's gulabjamuns, there's halva, there's sweet rice, there's a special curd subject. I just can't wait. You know, this khichdi every day is too much. And then the feast comes and you eat so much. Nowadays the devotees don't eat so much. But we used to eat so much. And then afterwards you think, oh, when you're rolling on the floor, when you couldn't get up, you think, oh, I ate too much. And tomorrow I have to go on book distribution again anyhow. Oh, this is terrible. Suppose that it's like that. Before you get married, you think, oh, I can't live without the goddess of fortune. Besides that, living in this ashram with these devotees, they're unclean, they don't respect me, there's, you know, they snore at night, they can't read the books, so everything will be better after I get married. Then one gets married, the wife snores. you still have to clean the room and so many things. She won't do the laundry because you don't love her. So many things happen. So one thinks, oh, it was better when I was a brahmachari. I didn't have to work so hard. But I only had one mouth to feed, and now I have three or four. This is too much. So one laments afterwards. So this hankering, lamentation, and then one thinks, well, let me renounce. And then he actually makes an endeavor. He becomes determined to renounce either in family life or in celibate life. But then he becomes even more attached to the things he's trying to renounce. Today is Ekadasi, and everyone is fasting. Everyone is eating except for me. I'm actually fasting. I'm not eating anything except for all these sense gratifiers that I'm surrounded by. Look at that. He's eating more than he should be eating on Ekadasi. He says he's a devotee, but I'm the real devotee because I'm fasting the whole day, and it's only 23 hours and 57 minutes left, and then I can finally eat. And today's Ekadasi, I've been fasting the whole day. It's another hour has gone by, and this is really tough, but I'm doing it anyhow because I'm really trying to make advancement, and at least tomorrow there's going to be a nice prasad, and wow, what a sacrifice. I hope Krishna is happy how much I'm suffering for him. So then finally, it's, 1 minute left, 30 seconds, 29, 28, count, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, Sharira, Vijayal, Jitendra, you're up there, we're down here, let's eat. And then one eats, enough for the next 3 weeks, in case there's another fast day in between. So one becomes even more attached to what he's trying to renounce. And there are so many different levels of whatever. But finally, one of progress in devotional service. But the essence of the whole focal point in Shraddha Prema, and what Śrīla Viṣṇu-nātha Chakravarti Thakura is explaining to us, is chant offenseless rounds. Or worship the deity offenselessly. Take prasadam offenselessly. With concentration, with some devotion. Do something for Krishna offenselessly. But of course, in this age, it's recommended to chant offenseless rounds. And that will take care of all the other problems we have. And the next time someone has a problem, and they say, and someone tells you, oh, Prabhu, just chant Hare Krishna and be happy. That we should actually understand how deep that is, that will factually solve our problems. Like nothing else can. So I'll stop there because there's a problem, we're going late. I won't answer any questions. Thank you very much. Krantara Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.